What's up, my friend? Welcome to the Finding Direction podcast. My name is Stu Massengill, and I'm here every single week to bring you a passionate guest or message dedicated to helping you find your purpose so that you can live a life full of passion, fulfillment, and happiness. From the bottom of my heart, thank you for hanging out with me, and let's dive in. What's up, my friend? Welcome back to another episode here on Finding Direction. This week, I am sitting down with Dr. Greg Hammer, and a little bit about Dr. Hammer. He is a professor at Stanford University School of Medicine. He is a pediatric intensive care physician, a pediatric anesthesiologist, and the author of the book, Gain Without Pain, The Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals. Dr. Hammer is a health enthusiast and a meditator utilizing a non-duality and mindfulness based approach, including his GAIN method. And on this episode, a few things that we dive into is how his love for stars turned into a love for medicine. We dive into what the vagus nerve is in your body and how you can actually start using this to reduce stress in your life. And we also talk about Dr. Hammer's four-step GAIN method to have more happiness, more peace, and more presence in your life. So there's so much value in this episode. I know you are going to enjoy it. If you have not yet, hit that subscribe button so you can join us every single week on the podcast. And without further ado, here we go. Dr. Hammer, welcome to the show and thank you so much for being here.
Great to be with you, Stu.
Heck yeah. So as we dive into our conversation today, I would love it if we could start off by, you know, obviously you've had such a huge part of your life in medicine. And I'm curious if you could share with us kind of the origin story of when did you first kind of come across a love for medicine or realize this is something that you kind of wanted to spend a lot of your life diving into?
Sure. Well, you know, I'll take a step back and say that when I was a young kid, you know, maybe 8, 10, 12 years of age, I was very interested in astronomy, actually. So I grew up outside of Chicago. I remember positioning my telescope at the end of my driveway, and the skies were clearest in the middle of winter, like in December, January, and it was often below zero out there. So occasionally my eye would get stuck to the eyepiece of my telescope. But in any case, I remember enduring that cold, but I was so fascinated by what I was looking at, the moon, you know, depending on what planets were visible, the moons of Jupiter, et cetera. Yeah. And, you know, one thing that really interested me about astronomy is the relationship between the micro and the macro, right? The relationship between planets, solar system, star group, galaxy clusters, universe. Yeah. And then when I was, I actually transferred from Northwestern to the University of Wisconsin in Madison because I was interested in two things that they didn't have at Northwestern, and they were nutritional biochemistry because I was becoming a vegetarian, and also astronomy. So I did study astronomy in university, but I also got interested in nutritional biochemistry. I was sort of a hippie. I stopped eating meat and other animal products when I was 18 as part of that. And so I figured I should learn about nutrition since I'm having such a restrictive diet. So I dove into that, and I got really interested in human biology through my interest in nutritional science, but I continued to be interested in astronomy. And the thing that interested me about human biology is, again, the relationship between the micro and the macro and sort of systems, interrelationships, and, you know, the relationship between what's inside the cell and the cell, and cells form tissues form organs form the body. Yeah. And I just was really interested in that whole spectrum. And so I decided to go to medical school instead of graduate school in astronomy because it was more pragmatic and my opportunities would be more broad. So I went to medical school, and then things went from there. I found that I had an affinity for people that worked with children. Wasn't so much the children, but it was, you know, the other physicians, nurses, others didn't take themselves quite so seriously. I've always had a low tolerance for ego, and I saw a lot less of that in pediatrics. So I went into pediatrics thinking I would subspecialize, and then I really fell in love with working in the intensive care unit. And anesthesia and critical care and pediatrics were a popular combo back then. So I did an anesthesia residency after my peds residency and then fellowships in pediatric anesthesia and critical care. And so that's been my career ever since. And it's been fantastic. Never looked back. But I think the origin really was more a generic interest in the interrelationship of everything. And I had a, you know, spiritual, an interest in spirituality from exactly that same perspective.
Interesting. If you could go back as you went throughout that journey, because it seems like, at least from researching your life and even just having this conversation with you now, like, you have lived a very satisfying life. Like, you've lived a good life. And I'm curious if you could go back to your younger self and give yourself a few words of wisdom as you were kind of trying to figure out this thing called your life, like, anything you'd go back and share with that younger version of Greg?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question, Stu. I'll reflect on the advice I do give to my trainees. And, you know, I often, in conjunction with that advice, give them a copy of my first book because it's all about wellness and having what might be called a mindfulness practice. I think that term has been a bit overused, but it's really finding a practice that allows us to deal with the adverse ways that our brains work. In other words, the ways that our brains are wired that appear to interfere with our ability to be present and happy. So I would tell my younger self, and I was very interested in spirituality and finding this, but you know, I think maybe I would have incorporated that even more. Find a way to be present. Find a daily practice that will help you rewire your brain, because our brains are hardwired in ways that appear to interfere with our happiness. And we have to have a plan if we want to rewire our brains. And the good news is our brains have this wonderful quality called neuroplasticity. So we can rewire our brains, but we have to be purposeful about it. So that's the advice I give to trainees. I've done that in we have a boot camp for critical care where we have beginning fellows from all over the country come to Stanford, and we do this training course. And when I'm asked what advice I would give these people, that is my advice. And others are talking about, you know, more practical things, I guess, to them. And they wonder why I said what I said, but stand by it. That's my advice.
Yeah. Could you share with our listeners who are not familiar with neuroplasticity, can you share basically like what that is?
Sure. Well, we can start with the recognition that our brains are hardwired in certain ways. So in other words, you know, we have so many billion neurons and they are interacting with each other, making, you know, each neuron, each nerve cell in our brain is connected to thousands of other nerve cells. So these, the connections and the way they're connected are called synapses. That's where we have the end of one little arm of a nerve impacting part of another nerve. And so each nerve has thousands of these connections. So again, we get back to interrelationship of all things and systems. But these neural connections become sort of relatively fixed. So we have patterns of neuronal activity in our brains. And the upshot of that is that we think in certain ways. And I think, you know, it's interesting. We could posit why we think the way we do, but it's because of all these connections. They form these patterns that really become our thoughts. And our thoughts, these patterns really have evolved over tens of thousands of years. So let's go back, say, 50, 75,000 years. Our forebears were sitting in a cave with trying to keep their family safe, keeping the fire going. And and there might have been a saber-toothed tiger lurking outside the mouth of their cave. So they had to be very leery. They had to always be thinking of danger and what might come in the future and looking at the worst thing that might happen, catastrophizing, if you will, because that kept them safe. That allowed them to survive and procreate and have more offspring. And so the genes that code for these patterns of thinking, this wariness, this future orientation, this negativity, if you will,
yeah,
became, the genes that code for those properties became propagated in the population. And so fast forward, here we are, we tend to be overly focused on the future and the past, and we have a negativity bias. So the upshot is we have a hard time being present.
Yeah.
And we have a hard time being optimistic and positive. Our natural tendency is to be rather negative. We have a negativity bias. So we tend to remember the negative and forget the positive. And somebody wrote that 80% of our thoughts are negative and 20% are positive. And that resonates with me because, you know, we get out of bed in the morning and we're a little sore from, you know, running the day before or shoveling snow or whatever it was. We focus on that, right?
Yeah.
We get up, we do our morning hygiene. We don't focus on the fact of the miracle that our kidneys are working and making this, filtered product that is passing effortlessly out to the outside world, and what a miracle it is, the human physiology and all of its manifestations. Yeah. No, we're focused on the fact that our knee's a little sore, right? And so this negativity bias and this distraction, overthinking the past and future, are ways that our brains are wired. So neuroplasticity, what that means is that we can actually change the way our brains are wired, right?
Yeah.
So we can actually have a practice, ideally at least a daily practice, where we train ourselves to think in different ways. So we can think in a more positive way and we can be more focused on the present moment. But to do that means sort of rewiring these patterns that have developed over a very long period of time.
Yeah.
And so we have to be very deliberate about it. Yeah.
Interesting. So this might be a good place. Obviously you're saying you need like a daily system, a daily method, something you can do regularly to kind of rewire your brain. And I think it's just such an interesting thought that you bring up. But it's like, it really does take so much more focus and intention to focus on the positive, right? It's just such an interesting thing that our brain does go, this is wrong, this isn't working, versus my body's a miracle, right? And so could you share with us, I know you've developed something called the GAIN method. It's sort of your daily practice for being more present, kind of shifting the way that your thoughts happen. And so could you share with us a little bit about what that GAIN method is and how can someone start to actively apply that in their life?
Sure. Well, GAIN is an acronym for gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment. And I think these are really the four pillars of happiness. So I studied Buddhism. I read Deepak Chopra and others, and you know, there's the 10 ways of this or the 12 paths to that or the, you know, 7 steps to this. And those are too many things for me to remember. So I tried to distill it down to the least, the real essentials. And I think they really are those four elements. And so I devised a practice that I thought my trainees initially, who I was teaching, could stick to. And, you know, many people think that meditation means you have to sit quietly without moving, possibly in an uncomfortable position for 30 minutes at a time and banish all thoughts from your head. And, you know, those are not possible. You know, nobody can sit still without scratching an itch for half an hour. And a half an hour is a long time and we don't always have that time. And then the idea of getting rid of all the thoughts in our head is just impossible. So many people have tried this and they failed. And so they put meditation aside or they associate it with something that only, you know, an ascetic with a shaved head and a, you know, a bull walking from house to house begging for rice can do. But no, so I thought, okay, I'm going to give you a 3-minute practice and everybody's got 3 minutes. So you set your intention the night before. I'm going to set my alarm. If I was going to get up at 6 a.m., I'm now going to get up at 5:57 a.m. And so if I was going to go to bed at 10 o'clock, I'm now going to go to bed at 9:57. So who doesn't have 3 minutes? So we get up in the morning. we open the blinds, if appropriate, do our morning hygiene thing, and then we find a comfortable place to sit, and we close our eyes, and we focus on our breath, and we slow down the phases of our breathing. So we breathe slowly, maybe to a count of three, in through our nose, pause to a count of three with our chest full, and then slowly release the breath without effort to a count of four. So we do this for a few cycles. So really we're taking 10 seconds for each breath. So our respiratory rate is 6 per minute. And when we slow our respiratory rate like that, we do a number of good things. You know, you and I mentioned the vagus nerve before we started recording, and we can talk about that afterwards. But this breathing activates the vagus nerve, and it has all kinds of wonderful effects on our physiology, which we can get into. But once we're sort of in this pattern of slow, deep breathing, we're expanding our chest, expanding our body, we begin this 3-minute contemplation. So we start with the G in gain, which is gratitude, and we simply contemplate that for which we're grateful. So I'm grateful for this day. You know, I'm grateful for being on the right side of the grass today. This day is a gift. I'm grateful for the loved ones in my life. I'm grateful for my community. I'm actually grateful for the work that I have the privilege to do, to serve others. You know, I'm grateful for my health, the miracle of the way the body works, the human physiology. It's amazing that we're even born when we know the complexity of how the embryo develops and fetus and so on. It's amazing that we're as perfect as we are. So I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for all of these things. And we contemplate that for 30 or 40 seconds. And then we move on to, excuse me, the A in gain, which is acceptance, because we can't just sort of try to pretend life is a bowl of cherries. Life is full of pain as much as it's full of joy. And we need to acknowledge that. So here we sit with something uncomfortable or even painful. So for me, the first thing I usually think of when I'm entering the acceptance portion of the gain meditation is my son. I lost my son at the age of 29, 6 years ago. And that pain is not going to go away. But through acceptance, I can decrease my suffering. So there's a formula in the book, suffering equals pain times resistance. And acceptance is sort of the inverse or opposite of resistance. So the more we resist things that are uncomfortable, the more we suffer. And we resist by, you know, trying not to think of something. If it's related to a relationship, another person, we may depersonalize that individual. So we resist in many ways. So here we're gonna accept. So we take this uncomfortable or painful experience with our eyes closed, also focused on our breathing, slowing it down. We actually imagine bringing this experience, this sensation, closer and closer. We imagine opening our chest, opening our heart, bringing this uncomfortable sensation into our heart and actually nurturing it, allowing it, sitting with it. And what we usually find, Stu, is that it's not as bad as we anticipated. And if we ask ourselves the question, can I live with this pain forever? The answer is at some point, yes. So we just sort of breathe, we allow. And then we move to the I in gain, which is intention, because as I said, if we want to rewire our brains to be happier, we need to have a plan. I love Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn's definition of mindfulness, which I think could be the definition of happiness. It's awareness of the present moment on purpose, non-judgmentally. So the on purpose is intention. So we recognize that we need a plan. We need to be purposeful. So we want to focus on the present. We want to begin to rewire our brains to be able to appreciate the present moment. So we may start with just our physical sensations. Just spend 15 seconds appreciating the pressure of the chair against our body, the tingling of the soles of our feet, the slightly sweet scent of the air that we're breathing as we take these slow, deep, intentional breaths. We may notice something we're hearing, like an airplane going by in the distance. We sit with these present sensations, and then we transition our thoughts to a commitment to be more positive. My intention, my purpose is to appreciate all the positive in my life. And the gain elements are interrelated. So my intention to be more appreciative is related to my gratitude for all of the good things in my life. So I'm reminding myself to be grateful and think of those good things. And then we transition to the N in gain, which is non-judgment, because we're always judging everything around us and other people and most harshly ourselves. And with our negativity bias, these are often negative judgments, right? Yeah. So with the N in non-judgment, as we sit with a slow, deep breathing, we might picture one of these beautiful NASA images of the Earth, apparently suspended in space. So it's a lovely planet, but it is just a planet. It is neither good nor bad. And things do not have to be good or bad. We don't have to judge. We can discern without judging. And so the Earth is just a planet. It's the planet that it is. It's neither good nor bad. And then it's only logical for me to think that I, too, am just the person that I am. I am neither good nor bad. I simply am. I am. And we link this I am-ness to the breath. We go back to focusing on the breath. And then we slowly open our eyes and we're ready to go out in the world. And really, that can be done in as little as 3 minutes.
Beautiful. I love it. So let me ask you about when it comes to acceptance. I'm curious, when you go through this process, at least when you're explaining it, what pops up into my mind is bringing a painful experience close, making it feel bigger, bringing it into my heart. Like what popped up in my mind as I was hearing you walk through that is like not necessarily pleasant. So can you expand upon a little bit more when it comes to acceptance, sort of what, like, is someone supposed to feel good when they're bringing this thing closer to them? Is it not? Is it a matter of confronting it so that you're not like suffering from it, as you mentioned? Or just if you could expand upon that a little bit, because I think, I'm going to practice the gain method. I want to, you know, at least implement it, do it for the next rest of the week. And I'm curious, as I go through that acceptance, I'm just curious if you could kind of help prep myself and any of our listeners who really want to start to implement this into their life.
Sure. Well, you know, the idea is, Stu, that rather than push away all these uncomfortable feelings that we have, just take one of them at a time and kind of sit with it and allow it. Because to do otherwise is to magnify our suffering. So let's say, you know, I had a falling out with a friend and they don't want to talk to me anymore. This actually happened to me not long ago. And I don't really know why this person told me that, let's just go our separate ways. I don't want to talk to you anymore. I don't want to tell you why I'm feeling this way. So I was very hurt, as you can imagine. So, you know, in my gain meditation thereafter, for some period of time, you know, at least on some days, I would, you know, I'm breathing slowly and deeply. I'm gone through my gratitude. I'm feeling very present and generally positive. And then I transitioned to thinking of this individual and this hurt that I feel. And I might sort of envision their face in front of me. And I'm breathing deeply. I'm sort of breathing into this sensation I have that's elicited by this individual's appearance. And I'm allowing it. And what happens is, as we practice this, and maybe over the next 10 or 20 seconds, I'm sort of feeling more comfortable with it.
Yeah.
I'm feeling more comfortable with the idea that we're all people, we're all fallible, we all have emotions, some of which are negative. And whatever this individual was experiencing when he said this to me was a reflection of the pain that he's feeling. Okay. And again, the interrelationship of these four elements, I'm not going to judge him. Right. I'm not going to judge what he did to me as being bad or wrong. It's just, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And this is part of life, right? Yeah. And we all have conflicts in our relationships, and we all have uncomfortable and painful feelings and emotions and experiences and sensations. So I'm just going to sit and breathe into this right? And when I do that, I kind of come to an understanding, and it diminishes my suffering over this, you know, this reality. Yeah. And so that's, you know, I hope that,
I like that
provides some insight and explanation.
Yeah, it definitely does. And it makes me think of, you know, sometimes I'll have conversations with people, you know, one being my girlfriend sometimes that we'll have, and it's like something will happen in our life, or like recently we had like a situation happen with our housing that we're living in, and we may not have had a place to live. And it's like, you know, something like that happens. And obviously we'd find a new place would be okay. But I think sometimes as things happen in our life, we can focus on them and suffer and, you know, let all these things happen, when the reality is, you struck a chord when you said it, that it is what it is. And if you suffer and you stress, it may not change the outcome. It just may change that you're going to have a painful experience as you go through whatever you're going through, right? Like, we all have unfortunate things that happen to us, but I just love how you said it. It's like, if we can accept it is what it is, it allows us to move through that in a little bit more of a peace, a little bit more presence. And so you nailed it on the head. I definitely, I get the A, and I'm going to start implementing it. So one other thing that you brought up is the idea of this vagus nerve. And can you expand upon a little bit for us, kind of like what the vagus nerve is, what its relation is with reducing stress in our life, and kind of how we can start to successfully like have a relationship with our vagus nerve, I guess.
Sure. Well, you know, we have different components of our nervous system, right? We obviously have what's called a motor system. So that those are nerves that go to our muscles that cause movement. We have our sensory nervous system. So that's, you know, we feel cold, hot, pinprick, pressure, et cetera. And those are, you know, we experience those all the time without thinking about it. But we have another component of our nervous system called the autonomic nervous system. And it could be called the automatic nervous system, but it's called the autonomic nervous system. And this is comprised of two balancing sides. And like most of the things in our human physiology are a balance or equilibrium between opposing forces, if you will. So our blood sugar is a balance between insulin, which our pancreas secretes to lower our blood sugar, and another hormone called glucagon, which elevates our blood sugar. And those come into balance and determine our resting blood sugar, which may or may not be out of whack, but those are the two principal factors that determine our blood sugar. So with regard to things like our heart rate, for example, our sympathetic autonomic nervous system is the fight or flight side. So stress activates the sympathetic nervous system. Our heart rate goes up, our blood pressure goes up. Actually, our blood sugar goes up because glucagon is secreted. So these changes happen in response to activation of the sympathetic nervous system. The parasympathetic nervous system is the side of the autonomic nervous system that keeps the sympathetic nervous system in check. So it lowers our heart rate, tends to lower our blood pressure, and has a number of other salient benefits. And the vagus nerve is this major nerve through which most of the parasympathetic nervous system is expressed, through activation of the vagus nerve. So signs of parasympathetic activation include an increase in our something called heart rate variability. So if I put some stickers on you and measured your EKG, looked at the electricity from your heart, there's variability in the baseline of your heart rate, and that's healthy. You want that variability. So that's called heart rate variability. It's actually a sign of good cardiac health. So activation of the vagus nerve, the parasympathetic nervous system, improves our heart rate variability, our overall cardiovascular function, our executive brain function, reduces our stress. Actually, is associated, more vagal activity is associated with longevity. And also, it tends to balance our hunger hormones, if you will, so we don't feel as hungry. So it has a number of really salient benefits. So how do we take advantage of activation of the vagus nerve? We can actually activate it intentionally. So if you get in a tub of ice water you have a lot of vagal activation.
Interesting.
Right? So you have a bit of a diving reflex. Your heart rate, once you get over the shock of it, your heart rate actually goes down. Like, you know, like you're like a diving seal. So cold water immersion activates the vagus nerve, but there's a much more practical way to activate the vagus nerve, and that's through slow, deep, intentional breathing. So that breathing, you know, in through the nose to a count of three, pausing to a count of three, releasing the breath without effort to a count of four, activates the vagus nerve. And that's something that we can take advantage of anytime. So I'm walking down the hall, I'm going to meet with my boss, I notice that my sympathetic nervous system is being activated, my heart rate's going up, I'm feeling kind of tense, my blood pressure's probably going up, and I'm having this whole flood of adrenaline in my body.
Yeah.
Well, I recognize that, and I start focusing on my breath and slowing it down and do these slow, deep breathing into my belly, and my heart rate goes back down, my blood pressure probably goes back down, et cetera. So yeah. I feel more at peace, more present, more positive. And the other thing, Stu, that's rather magical is when we practice the GAIN method, we are linking our slow, deep breathing and vagus nerve activation to gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment. So after you've been practicing this for days or weeks, what happens is when you focus on your breath and you slow it down just the way you do at the beginning of your 3-minute GAIN practice, the benefit of those other elements comes to you as well. So you start to feel a bit more grateful, a bit more allowing or accepting. You get in touch with your purpose, your purposefulness. You become less judgmental. All this gets linked to the slow, deep breathing in addition to activating the benefits of the parasympathetic nervous system through the vagus nerve. So, you know,
that's awesome.
We're training ourselves. It's like this becomes a Pavlovian response. We all remember probably from grade school or high school, we learned Pavlov's dog experiment, right? Where he rang a bell and he fed the dogs. And he rang a bell and he fed the dogs. And so the dog started associating the bell with feeding.
Right.
And so then he rang the bell but didn't give them food and they salivated because they were expecting food. So this association between the bell and the food is called a Pavlovian response. So we can actually take advantage of the connection between deep breathing and gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment, as well as have these other physiologic benefits mediated through the vagal nerve just by focusing on the slow breathing.
That is very interesting. So by practicing the slow breathing after you've associated it to the GAIN method, now all you really need to do is do the slow breathing and it's going to reactivate Pavlov's sort of connection to the GAIN method and all the benefits.
Right. Exactly. So cool. And you know, what we're doing is we're actually rewiring our brain. Every time we do the slow, deep breathing and connect that to GAIN, the GAIN elements, we're rewiring our brain to be more grateful, allowing, intentional, and non-judgmental. So this is, we're taking advantage of our neuroplasticity and gaining all of these other benefits at the same time.
Heck yeah. I love it. I love it. Thank you so much for explaining that. And I think one thing that at least I think has helped me even hearing this too is like sympathetic. The way I kind of associate it is like sympathetic S, stress, right? So your sympathetic's in control of your stress, and parasympathetic P is in control of your peace. So just kind of like making that association. And I love how you give us the different ways that we can intentionally activate the vagus nerve, ice bath, breathing, and again, practicing that GAIN method. So thank you so much for sharing that. That's massively, massively valuable. And I'm curious for our listener who's going, man, I need more Dr. Hammer in my life. I need to hang out with them, whether that's virtually or through a podcast or, you know, your books. Where's the best place for them to find you, learn more about you and everything that you're up to?
Well, one website is greghammermd.com, greghammer.com, greghammermd.com. I just want to say, Stu, to anybody who's listening, that this negativity bias, associated with overthinking the past and judging ourselves leads to a lot of bad thoughts and low self-esteem and depression. Yeah. And overthinking the future with our negativity bias leads to a lot of fear and anxiety. So depression and anxiety are very common. And this is the way all of our brains work. So let's give ourselves a break. We all have a negativity bias. We all overthink the past and future. Yeah. We're all excessively self-judgmental and in a negative way, generally. So let's not be self-critical. Let's understand that this is the way our brains are wired. And the good news is that we have the ability to rewire our brains, baby steps, little bit at a time.
Yeah, yeah.
No expectations. There's no such thing as failure.
I love it. Beautiful, beautiful. Well, Greg, one last question we have for you is a question we ask to all of our guests, because we want to help our listener find direction, but we also believe in doing it through action. Is what would you say is one thing our listener could do in the next 24 to 48 hours to start finding direction in their life?
Well, I would say do a gain meditation.
Yeah.
And I think we sometimes need to remind ourselves, especially with COVID and all this, you know, working from home and stuff, how much we need to be connected to others in community. Mm. So I would say today, you know, reach out to your neighbor, you know, go for a walk, talk to the person on the street that you see watering their lawn or whatever they're doing, you know, make really take advantage of those connections and be, you know, loving and friendly and connect with those around you. I think it's so vital.
Heck yeah. Awesome. Well, Greg, thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for hanging out with us. It's been awesome to pick your brain and, you know, all the masterful things that you've done in your journey. So thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you, Stu. Anytime. I'd love to join you again.
Congratulations, my friend, on crushing it through another episode here on Finding Direction. Make sure you give yourself a pat on the back, a round of applause, because you are one of the few who is not willing to settle for less than a life that lights up your soul, and that is absolutely something worth celebrating. I hope you received some value from that conversation with Dr. Hammer. And as always, I hope you take at least one thing, even if it's just practicing the GAIN method today or tomorrow, just practice it once. Implement one thing from this episode into your life. Maybe it's that breathing that he talked about to calm your vagus nerve. But take one thing from the episode and just start implementing one thing into your life, and your life is going to move in the forward direction. Other than that, that is all we have for you. I hope you have a beautiful, wonderful, outstanding rest of your day. And if you do not want to go anywhere, don't feel like you need to, because I have another episode coming up right after this. All right, my friend, I will talk to you soon. Take care.